we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Holt.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz, and we start with a headline from the Stratford and Newham Express, read by Brian Perkins.
Violent crime, priest hits out.
Thank you, Christine Hodgson of East London, for sending us that. Now we'll meet the teams, and will you welcome, please, first, on my right, the Guardian columnist Francis Wheen. And with him, the comedian and writer Andy Hamilton. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran of The Times. And from The World at One, Nick Clark. And before we start round one, here's something spotted in the Hull Daily Mail.
Pictured above is the hole-in-the-heart boy, Arnoud Wabo, in the arms of the Princess of Wales at Harefield Hospital. He's now recovering in intensive care.
Thank you, Jean Williams of the East Riding, for the first of what I hope will be many Princess Di jokes. Francis, what other place threw out what would throw out whom to another place?
I think Michael Howard is sort of the answer to this. He's been trying to force through for months now an asylum bill which will stop refugees coming to this country because he says they're a bad influence. And he should know, since his dad was a Romanian refugee. And look what he lumbered us with. But anyway, it's been thrown out by the House of Lords, which in certain lights closely resembles an asylum. And I think those people in the House of Lords feel a certain kindred spirit with people who've got no home to go to and feel rather persecuted and unloved and unwanted. So they've chucked it out.
This refers to the House of Lords, who voted against the Home Secretary's asylum bill. They didn't actually understand what it was all about, but it's such fun annoying Michael Howard. The bill would have required refugees pitching up at Heathrow to prove they'd been tortured. You'd think the fact that they'd spent 2 hours being interviewed by Heathrow immigration people would be proof. So 2 points there. Andy, your question, who's striking out may bring teachers out on strike?
Can I just add something to the last question, actually, because it hinged on one very interesting topic of discussion, which was the House of Lords ruled that Belgium was not a safe country. When they proposed, well, can we send them to Belgium, they said no, because they could get knocked down by Eddie Merckx or something like that. But to return to your original question, Simon, this would be the story, I presume, of this rather unfortunate story of this boy at a school in Nottingham who is a bit lively. A little bit lively, bit of a scamp. And, the teachers felt that possibly they couldn't teach him, so they expelled him. But unfortunately, it was overturned by the local authority on appeal, and the little boy came back, and the teachers announced they were going on strike, and then they tried to broker a compromise, and this kid's dad threatened to beat the teachers up. I think that was the compromise. And so, I have to say, this not the most attractive child I've ever seen. Actually, no, that's not very kind, because he's only got his dad's genes. he is now, I think the latest compromise is that he might be taught in a sealed room by Arnold Schwarzenegger. But it does seem a bit ridiculous, to be honest, that the tale of one child should so dominate. But he's being seen as a symbol, of course. He is a symbol of what's wrong with Britain today.
And the wonderful thing about it is that the compromise that's been reached involves him being taught for 2.5 days at home, which is going to cost £11,700 per annum, which is only just less than it costs to board at Eton.
Well, that's where he should be, Eton, of course. He'd be, because he'd be a natural there, but...
A compromise has been reached. The boy's name will be on the school roll, but he won't actually attend lessons, just like all the other children at the school. Nick, your first question. Where did Tom, Dick and Harry divorce themselves from John over a bill?
It's to do with a divorce bill. Listeners to this programme may know that I have a special relationship with Lord Mackay, the Lord Chancellor, because I so brilliantly do his Scottish Edinburgh accent.
And for not on the world at one. He doesn't appear. You just do it.
No, I do it on this programme. No, he's for some reason he won't do that. Anyway, he has been trying to persuade the House of Commons and the House of Lords that it's a very good idea to allow people to divorce simply by saying, I divorce thee. And the MPs and the Lords have objected over and over again. including all the ministers of the Crown, and he's got to go back and reconsider what he's going to do next.
Am I right in thinking it's the Conservatives who've objected, isn't it?
And yes, presumably it is.
Because they don't understand, because if they don't divorce, do they? Because if the Conservative's unfaithful, his wife just holds his hand on the doorstep in front of the camera.
But it's to do with the waiting time, isn't it? That the government was proposing you should be able to get divorced after 12 months, and the rebels said it should be 18 months, because you can't rush into these things. You know, if you're in an unhappy marriage, you should suffer for a long time, as they should know, having had John Major for over 5 years. So if they can't escape, they don't see why anyone else should.
Exactly, yes. It was the most humiliating defeat for the government since, the vote on Tuesday on the asylum. Alan, your first question is introduced by a piece of music.
Well, goodness gracious me.
Alan, I think you're going to get this one. Whose hearty trip to the theatre was diagnosed in vain?
We had some drain trouble earlier in the week, Simon. And I normally get up quite early in the morning, but I'd laid in a bit. And it was 8 o'clock. I heard this noise saying, "Pass us the blow lamp, die." And I looked out of the window, and there were 8 men in the trench taking up this drain down to the road, because we had a bit of a problem with the manhole cover, and there was Princess Diana with the fringe and the earrings and the wonderful makeup and a moleskin and a large wrench, big spanner, working away. But before she went plumbing, she went off to Magda Yakub. Now, think about Magda Yakub, who is a great surgeon, but like all great heart surgeons, like DeBakey and like Christian Barnard, they cannot get enough publicity. They want to be God. And Magda Yakub has not been talked of for a time, so he got Princess Diana along to stand in and look soulfully over the patient. Thank God the patient was anaesthetized. It would be a nightmare.
And you'd think, my God, I always thought the Grim Reaper was a bloke.
Well, she described herself originally as the Queen of Hearts. As the Queen of Gallbladders, doesn't have quite the same ring.
She's the Queen of Open Hearts now.
The Queen of Ventricles and Aortas.
Matt had a great cartoon on the Telegraph the following day showing a bloke with X-rays, showing them to the patient and saying, "I'm sorry, you'll have to have the operation again because the photos of Princess Diana didn't come out." But, that's what it was about. It was about the Princess of Open Hearts.
But she's been to 7. She's been to 7 operations. I mean, I think if a surgeon said to me, "Would you like to come along and see an operation?" Out of interest, I might go, but I don't think I'd buy a season ticket.
So the scores at the end of round 1 are Francis and Andy 4, Alan and Nick 4. Francis, your next question. Who saw red at blue flashing lights?
I think this is the Independent Television Commission, which has criticised ITV for all this blue material they keep showing, the blue surge, in fact, of all those people in the bill. And it's a very odd justification. They said that all these police shows encourage lawlessness, which I couldn't quite follow. It's like saying all these hospital dramas encourage us all to get ill. Or watching John Major on the news every day encourages us all to become morons. But this is the logic of it, and they say they've got to stop it at once. So I don't know what you have instead, because without police shows, television would last for about an hour every evening, and then you get the close down, the national anthem.
This same report, though, did praise Carlton's programming. So I'm not saying any more than that. I'm just... I don't think they should ban police programming as such. I think they should just ban certain lines of dialogue, like "you are out of order," shouldn't they? They should lose their license if any program, all that sort of stuff.
You've told Sergeant what, now tell me.
The Independent Television Commission criticised ITV for screening too much entertainment. First time they've been accused of that. Andy, who won't be doing time with the Radio Times?
Is this about Thought for the Day?
No, that comes later. Oh. So think of doing time.
Oh, yes. This is a lot of easy, cheap laughter here because it's a Michael Howard story again. Michael Howard decided, you know, a whole week had gone by and he hadn't played the hard man. So he got to work on Monday morning. He thought, right, what'll I do? There's some of them have got little battery-operated televisions. Only about 2,000 prisoners, I think, or something like that. So he said, right, he marched in there and he pulled out the plug and he said, no easy time for you, sunshine. And he marched out and then he went in the House of Commons. He said, I've taken away their televisions. And basically he's saying that they can't have TVs in their cells, although all the prison officers are pleading with him to put them back because the TV, only by anaesthetising them, by showing them Anthea Turner's Love Bus, can they guarantee that they won't smash the prison up. And there are only two police officers on duty in the whole prison, so they need the TVs. And what?
Battery-operated televisions don't have plugs.
Ah, yes, but Michael Howard didn't know that. I mean, he actually ripped out the wrong plugs. And thank you for that, Nick. That was very, very,
it's a pleasure.
Very sweet of you. You wait till it's your question. Right. Anyway, that was roughly it.
You've got absolutely right. Michael Howard planned to remove all TV sets from prison cells. Some governors claim that watching TV could encourage drug dealing and violence, but that's only if they're watching children's BBC. But they've been reassured the move isn't likely to affect top security prisoners who like to spend their evening watching Sky Sports in the pub. Nick, have a listen to this. That was Going Underground by The Jam. Who struck a discordant note underground?
It wasn't the... it's not the conductor, is it? No, it's a lovely conductor story. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I remember. Yes, this is Mr. Monte... the Count of Monte Cristo. He's a name like that, who's a busker on the underground. He tried to sue the underground to, or allow him to play his guitar at a bank underground station, and he lost. And he's going to battle on. It's very hard to imagine why London Underground are so obsessed with the idea of removing all the buskers, but they are, and so the Count of Monte Cristo has to go. Is that right? Monte Cristo? Something like Monte Cristo.
Carafino.
Cristofaro.
Cristofaro. Well, I knew I was close.
You're right. This is the case of the Italian busker Franco Di Cristoforo, who appealed against a conviction for playing on the London Underground. He was astonished to learn that murdering Bob Dylan was a criminal offence under British law. Wasn't all bad news, though, when the appeal court confirmed that soliciting for money and causing a nuisance to passengers were both illegal. London Underground was forced to sack all its ticket inspectors. Alan, which school of thought wants to catch them young?
Oh, this is one about you should be brought up by a nanny, not go to nursery school. Children are going, I mean, as women, I should think too, it's very careful. This is hedged around with all sorts of political disorder. Thousands of letters will be shoved through my letterbox. Well, don't be letters either. But everybody's going to work too early. I mean, women are having their children, and 10 minutes later, they're back on the Eurobond desk, or whatever it is, and these children are being sent off to schools. You can actually probably send your children off as embryos now. You bring your driver around to the front, and you say, just drop my womb off at the Junior Road Womb Infants. Going off to edit the Sunday Times. And this turns out to be bad for children, being wrenched from the tit at a very early age and given to school teachers. So having decided that an enormous amount of resource and money and thinking and an enormous amount of Gillian Shepherd, indeed, should be put into thinking about nursery schools, they're now having to rethink it and saying that children really shouldn't be going to school at all. Except in the case of Richard Wilding. Richard Wilding will probably be the only child educated. He will live in this little fortress without all the teachers in England will be teaching him, because no other child should go to school at all, because terrible things happen to them. They go there and they fail their exams and become unemployed and all that, and the mother should stay at home bringing them up. Breastfeeding till 25.
And the scores at the end of round two are Francis and Andy 8, Alan and Nick 8. And we begin round three with a cutting from The Guardian.
A Cardiff man found with drugs and a sock inside his underpants told police he kept them there in case of a headache.
Thank you, Ted Shepherd of Thelwall, for that. Francis, who were told, think not on tomorrow?
No idea. Think not on tomorrow?
I was trying to say that in a very ecclesiastical kind of way.
It's thought for the day.
Yes. Thought for the day.
Yes.
Mm. They don't want vicars anymore.
Yes.
Because they're not religious enough.
Mm. Too churchy.
Too churchy. So they've sacked all these bishops and vicars. And,
Vinnie Jones, apparently.
Yep. Cliff Richard. Yep. Anthea Turner.
No, it's thought for the day.
Well, I was completely confused by this, because one minute they said it was because these people were too churchy, as you might expect, given that they were all vicars and bishops. And then the next minute it was said that they weren't religious enough, and they were dabbling in politics. I think Rabbi Blue has survived, though, because he's not too churchy.
But he is gay.
In fact, he's not very churchy at all. But he's got an interesting line in Recipes, so he's staying on.
Decay away from religion. The BBC, when I was young, I wasn't that young, it was Lift Up Your Hearts. And tub thumpers would come on and say, we're all doomed, we're all damned, and you're burning hell fire. It was wonderful.
Yeah, but
I love that first thing in the morning. Really got your ginger going. You were sitting there spitting your toys out into the Kellogg's, out of the packet.
No, because
this man came on and said, you think you've had an enjoyable night on the tiles? Well, you're going to die and you'll be roasted. And it was wonderful. And now we've got this thing where these blokes come on and waffle emptily in caring themes, this and that. And very soon it will disappear altogether. People will have a program called Stone Me, and they'll have cab drivers coming on. I had that Lazarus in the back of the cab the other day. Did he tip? Did he bug?
Andy, here's your piece of music. Lonnie Donegan. I mean, none of us remember him because we're far too young.
I played with Lonnie Donegan. Well, I mean, I know I played an instrument with Lonnie Donegan. I mean, straight as a dial, Lonnie.
Lonnie was singing World Cup Willie, a condition that affects men every 4 years. Andy, who did the trick for a hat but would rather have his ball back?
This is, of course, that it was a dull news week. Therefore, the first thing we do is revive memories of the World Cup. It seems to me we have anniversaries of our World Cup win in 66 every other Tuesday. And this story is that at the end of that game, Helmut Haller, the vile assassin-like inside forward of West Germany, who scored that very jammy first goal, ran off with the ball, which, of course, we all know by rights belonged to Jeff Hurst, because he'd scored 2.5 goals in that game. And the rumour has it that Helmut took it home and hid it, despite, you know, gunboats being sent up the Rhine to go fetch it. And it now transpires that we've discovered the identity, the whereabouts of this yellow ball, and Jeff Hurst wants it back. And Francis informs me that the Mirror have offered it, what is it, 80?
I think the Daily Mirror's offered 80 grand for it.
80 grand? I'll paint my ball yellow, that'll be all right. Batter it about a bit.
Rub a bit of dubbing on it, no one will know.
Yeah, and anyway, that's the story. And
quite right, hat-trick scorer Jeff Hurst says he wants the ball back as it might inspire the England team this summer. He's not superstitious, but he is desperate. And controversy still rages about the role of the Russian linesman in England's third goal. The Germans swear the ball never crossed the line, but 100,000 said it did. And 100,000 was a lot of rubles in those days. Nick, what calibre of funny business neither topped the bill nor paid it?
Oh, yes, Cannonball. I've got a big problem with this. Is this a popular television programme at all?
No, it's a much-hated television programme, right. But it does have a lot of viewers.
I haven't watched it. It's to do with Cannon and Ball, who apparently have they've made some investments which are very, very unkind. Is that right, Alan?
Absolutely.
But they're born-again Christians now, aren't they? Which was where the trouble started, because they had to drop their old routine. Any jokes that they thought were irreligious had to go, which didn't leave them with very much of their act, about enough to fill one thought for the day, I should think. So they weren't earning anything, and that's why they've gone bust.
The company indeed earned $300,000 in back taxes by Tommy Cannon. He's the straight man. And his partner Bobby Ball, he's the other straight man. As Francis said, they're a born-again Christian comedy act, but then you have to be born again when you've died as often as they have. And the scores at the end of round three are still drawn. Francis and Andy, 12. Alan and Nick, 12. And before we start the final round, here's something spotted in the Straits Times.
On Qantas Airlines, special meals or babies and youngsters can be prepared.
Francis, your song.
Mud, glorious mud. Nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow. And there let us wallow in glorious mud.
Who tried to go back in time, Francis, but just got stuck in the mud?
Probably the BBC. It usually is. I think it's, or maybe it's an independent company. Anyway, it's one of these period costume dramas that is so popular again. And there's some poor village down in Devon, which is the only bit... Only, exactly.
Sorry. What am I doing? Showing off what you're doing. No? Nobody tell you?
There's some poor village down in Devon, Laycock.
Is it Laycock?
It could be, yeah.
It's in Wiltshire.
All right, West Country.
Right. Yeah, right. Oh, right here, right here. This is...
Yeah, do you want to spell that for us? There's a village in the West Country whose name I'm not at liberty to disclose because it doesn't want any more publicity than it's already had, because it's the only village in England which can still pass for an 18th century high street, or a 19th century one for that matter. And so whenever they're making any of those costume dramas, Pride and Prejudice, the new Geoffrey Archer novel, that sort of thing, they have to go down there and film. But to make it look convincing, they tip about 5 lorry loads of mud into the high street. And the poor people who live there then have to wallow in this mud to cross the road to buy a loaf of bread. And they're a bit fed up with it, as well they might be.
So wait, if it stops that cow, Jane Austen, picking up all these awards, I tell you, she's so fed up with it. And she never turns up, she never goes and makes it. Is it ungracious or what, you know?
This was Granada, who left the streets of the village of Laycock swimming in mire after the filming of a 19th century costume drama. Granada explained they were unable to use a normal mix of gravel, peat and manure because supplies hadn't been replenished since Judith Chalmers' last makeover. Nick, your last question. Who raised eyebrows with his remarkable performance?
I do like this story very much. It is about a conductor called Something Berg.
Something? That's not bloody good enough from you. He's named after a village in Uzbekistan. It's called, I think, Kreitzman, wasn't it?
Kreitzberg. Was that right? Something? Something like that.
Yes,
anyway,
he is.
He was standing in front of this orchestra.
Lake Kreitzberg.
It's a sad and a funny story in its own way, because he was an excellent conductor. And he had an unfortunate accident, which meant he couldn't move either of his arms. And so, obviously, this might inhibit his performance, you'd think. But no. Being a resourceful sort of fellow, he chose some other part of his anatomy, and you can have a game guessing what it was he chose. And he went up on stage and did it with this other part of his anatomy. He did it with his eyebrows.
He
conducted the entire piece with his eyebrows.
Well, it was an eyebrow piece of music, wasn't it?
He used his eyebrows as part of a general pattern of using facial features to convey the emotion of the piece he was conducting. Dennis Healy was immediately inspired to try his luck as a conductor, took the podium, signalled the upbeat, and promptly knocked out both soloists. Alan, your last question. Why might chimps be mixing more than just pots of tea in future?
Oh, right. This is rubbish, this story. This is an entirely fake story.
It was in the Times, yeah.
A great newspaper. It doesn't stop printing rubbish. Some of the rubbish is quite funny, but this was serious rubbish. It's about a monkey. It's a monkey. It's about an inch high. And it's been lost for thousands of years, which is hardly surprising. It's tiny. It's thing. You think it was just, all over China, they must have been swatting them. Think, there's a bloody big spider. And it's called the ink monkey, because many years ago, in the 12th century, the Chinese, who... Chinese calligraphy is quite complicated. I mean, it's complicated enough if you're a monk, but it's a killer, a little chimpanzee. But they pressed into service the monkeys to help them out. What the monkeys did, they lived in the ink pots. And when the calligraphers banged on the side of the ink pot, the monkeys thought, oh, God, is it Monday again? Came out of the ink pot, covered in ink, and the calligraphers then dipped their pens in the monkeys, which saved, saved a lot of laundry. And then calligraphed, and then they put the monkeys back in the ink pots, and we haven't seen the monkeys for about 600 years, hardly surprising. But now they've turned up again under the new liberation. I suppose it's a sop to Hong Kong. The Chinese have shown that they haven't killed all these monkeys, that some of them are still alive, and they've reappeared in the Times. I don't believe it either.
I thought it must be an April Fool Fest, and then I realised, in fact, this explained the Daily Mail editorials that have turned up. They've got ink monkeys, haven't they?
What does the future hold for them now, though? They, I mean,
they can retrain as computer mice.
This one's not working.
And before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis?
Yes, this is from The Times, the Journal of Record. Surgeries and hospitals in the Thames Valley were warned to be on the alert yesterday for a burglar who lost a finger during a break-in when he was attacked by a greyhound. Police were unable to take prints after the incident in Collieborough, Milton Keynes, because the dog ate the finger while his owner was dialing 999.
Andy?
Well, this is from Bill Armiger of Gloucester, and it records the most remarkable feat in the world of skiing. Klaus Henkel, 43, was skiing near Poprad in Czechoslovakia when disaster struck. I was at the head of the slope when I felt an urgent need for the toilet, he explained. There was a small concrete convenience nearby, so I went in and sat down. When I tried to get up, I discovered that my bottom was frozen to the sea. Despite repeated calls for help, Mr. Henkel remained trapped in the cubicle for almost 48... Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Mr. Henkel remained trapped in the cubicle for almost 48 hours before, in desperation, ripping off the seat and skiing down to civilization with it still attached to his backside. Next time, I'll spray my buttocks with antifreeze, he said.
Nick, you're clipping. Mine comes from The Independent, courtesy of Mrs. Lewis of Hungerford, and it refers to the Princess of Wales, and there's no mention of a heart in this cutting, I'm glad to say. Today, the Princess visits the small Patagonian town of Gaiman. She will sail in a catamaran in the hope of seeing the renowned friendly whales jumping off the Atlantic coast before taking tea and cakes in a traditional Welsh tea.
Alan Corran.
Well, we spend so much time in the news, quiz, Simon, with indecorous newspapers. I thought I found something that really takes the cake for decorousness, gentility, as you would expect from the West Sussex Advertiser. It says, Darren Foley, a 22-year-old Pulborough barman, has been banned from sunbathing on public beaches in Lanzarote after he cut out 7 paper letters on the first day of his fortnight's holiday and arrange them on his chest to form an offensive expression in his suntan. The letters, not in this order, O-Y-C-U-K-U and F.
The final scores are everybody 16, so it's a draw. And that's all for this week. Until next week, goodbye. Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton and Nick Clark. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and Adam Bostock-Smith.